from an old movie called The Bucket List. Remember The Bucket List? Generally, what people remember about The Bucket List was the fact that there was a bucket list, right? Bucket lists are the things that you want to do before you kick the bucket, before you die. And so these two guys that have both been diagnosed with a terminal cancer decide that instead of trying to throw a Hail Mary and receive some experimental treatment that has a small chance of extending their life, that they're going to use their time left to go cross items off of their bucket list. One guy is a guy who worked very hard all of his life as a mechanic, that's Morgan Freeman, to take care of his wife and his children, the oldest of whom came unexpectedly and impeded his plans to go to college and become a teacher or a professor. The other, Jack Nicholson, is a man who is very, 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 very wealthy. He's made a lot of money, self-made from the ground up, started working when he was young, and now is a tremendously successful man, but doesn't have any personal relationships left in his life. And so when people think about the movie The Bucket List, they think about a bucket list. Maybe, I don't know if you have a bucket list. I have a bucket list that gets constructed along the way, crossed off by a 24-year-old RV and go to see the Crazy Horse Monument this summer. And we're going to go see the Grand Canyon. And I want my boys to see the Rocky Mountains and the Pacific Ocean and eventually the Redwoods and the Sequoias. I don't know what's on your bucket list, but there are all these things that we want to do. But that's not really what the movie is about. It's not about doing all of the things that we want to do or seeing all of the things that we want to see before we die. It's about two men who are asking the most important question, which is not what is the meaning of life. That I don't have enough time to discuss that in one sermon. It's been debated by theologians and philosophers since as early as the days were that people could think about such things and communicate about them. No, instead they're asking the question, what is the meaning of my life? That's really what's at hand and at the heart of this movie. That's what it's about. That's what made it so powerful. What legacy did I leave behind? How will I be remembered? This is kind of a precursor to a sermon series that will begin next week on Homecoming Sunday called Obituary. I do a lot of funerals. When you grew up in a community and you've pastored a church as long as I've pastored a church, and you've been involved with as many efforts as I've been involved in across the Lima area, you get a lot of requests from a lot of people who don't have a church or a pastor to do a funeral. And I want to tell you something. Except for a very, very small percentage, infinitely small percentage of certain individuals, most of us will have an obituary that was not written by us. It will be written by family and or friends who were a part of our life. And so the legacy that you leave behind, the way it will be explained, will not be by you. It'll be written out by those who loved you. And so the question that I have is, what will they remember? When I ask them the question, what was the meaning of your life, what will they say? We're going to look at different aspects of that over the course of the next 5 weeks or so, leaving a legacy. This is the question. Deuteronomy 6:4 is the most important prayer in all Judaism. If you go to a place and you see an Orthodox, observant Jewish man, and he's wearing the clothes and has the hairstyle and all the accoutrements that he believes will bring him in line with the Old Testament teaching on the way that we're supposed to look, you will see on that person some leather straps. And at the end of those leather straps, you will see small boxes. And inside of those boxes are pieces of paper. And written on those pieces of paper in Hebrew are Deuteronomy 6:4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. It introduces this portion of Deuteronomy, this reminder that with all the gods and goddesses that existed in the world at the time that Deuteronomy was written, that there's only one whose voice you need to worry about. That's a good reminder in our age when there are so many gods and goddesses that often we chase after. Gods and goddesses that can lead us astray. And the writer of Deuteronomy goes even further and says, if you really want to make this the center of who you are, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, love your neighbor as yourself, you need to meditate them. You need to pray this prayer first thing when you wake up in the morning, and you need to pray it and meditate upon it last thing before you go to sleep. And throughout the day, when you have opportunities, think about this. Think about what it means to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, to love your neighbor as yourself, and impart this to your children so that they will eventually begin to think about this first thing when they wake up in the morning and the last thing that they meditate upon before they go to sleep. It is to be the heart of the question, the answer to the question, what is the meaning of my life? And the reason why you need to meditate on it first thing in the morning and last thing at the end of the day and then throughout the day at various times when time permits is that we lose our way. The other gods and goddesses of this world take our attention and turn it away. And we can become frustrated with dreams that we had when we were younger that have not come to pass. We can turn our attention to doing other things in this life and forget why we're doing them in the first place. I had a good friend when he was in high school. He made the decision that he was going to be a millionaire before he was the age of 30. That was his goal, and that was the center of his life. And so he went through high school, graduated, went to college, graduated, took a job with a developer, and succeeded in his quest before he was 30 years old. Before he was 27 years old, he had $1 million. That was shortly right before he was in prison for embezzlement. And he spent 9 months in prison. And during that time, he had a wife and he had two young children. And she moved out of the house and she looked to start a new life without him. And he was alone. See, if we're not thinking about what it means to listen to the one voice from the one true God, first thing in the morning when we wake up praying that prayer, last thing at the end of the day, meditating upon it, thinking about it throughout the day, and imparting it upon our children so that it becomes the first thing that they think about when they wake up in the morning, and the last thing that they meditate upon at the end of the day, we can forget. We can become enamored with other things. Interesting to me that when Jesus is asked the question, what is the greatest commandment? He's quoting from Deuteronomy. Does that sound familiar? Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus knew the scriptures. strange too, again, when we think about this scripture, the other scripture we have this morning, the 37th from the 37th chapter of the Psalms, that we listen to King David write about what's really important in life and about all of the ways that we can get distracted, that we can get upset that other people get things that we don't get, that we can get upset when other people are fulfilled in ways that we're not fulfilled, particularly those who cut corners, those who cheat, those who don't seem to be as, quote, righteous, unquote, as ourselves. And it can take our life in a different direction. How odd is it, or maybe inspiring then, that the King of all kings in the history of Israel, the one who built the walls of Jerusalem and made her the capital city, the one who secured the land within her borders by organizing an army that had won conquests and battles that had never been experienced before in Israel's history, the one who rose to the highest heights and laid the ground so that his son Solomon could build the temple, the most important thing that could be done in that community to establish this permanent place where people could be made right with God. How interesting it is to me that as he talks about not getting distracted, all the ways we can get distracted by taking our hearts off of this one thing that matters, that we're supposed to meditate on first thing in the morning and last thing at the end of the day. That it's the meek that will inherit the earth, he says. Meek is the Hebrew word that's being used is anah. And it's used about 16 or 17 times in the Old Testament. And it's used for the word poor, and it's used as a word for afflicted. But 10 out of those times, it's used as a word for humble. And that would be the case here. This idea that as life turns and as we continue to live it and we begin to think about our legacy and what matters and the compass that we have set for ourselves, the true north that we will follow as individuals, that it is humility. It is taking our life and understanding that God has given it as a gift on His behalf and on the behalf of others. That it's in that place that we will find true meaning. That we'll find wholeness. My friend who went to prison, he got out of prison. He had a jailhouse conversion experience. Methodists don't talk much about justification. This moment when we know that we know that we know that God's love is for us. That Jesus died so that we would know that we were loved by God, even though sometimes, often, we're not very lovable. And sometimes we giggle or laugh at jailhouse conversions, but this one seemed to take. When he got out, he abandoned trying making $1 million as his goal, serving the great god of greed and riches and success, those gods, and instead sought to seek the voice of the one true God. Gave himself up primarily to teenagers. That's how I met him. We worked together when I was appointed at a church. He wanted to impart to these kids that there was something more important in life than making $1 million before you were 30 years old. Continued to stay in that ministry and at the same time got involved in a lot of teaching ministries, learned, did a lot of Bible study, got involved in the Emmaus movement. was responsible for helping literally hundreds and hundreds, partly responsible anyway, hundreds and hundreds of people encountering the grace of God. People who had lost their way, who woke up in the morning thinking about something that was not worthy of defining a life. He was somebody who was quick to give a testimony of what the grace and love of God could do, even when you totally mess up. He died unexpectedly a year ago last summer, died of a massive heart attack. He was in his 60s. They say the line at the church that he called his home, the church where he had been a member for many years, but then the church that he actually became a part of after his experience encountering death and destruction. They say the line went from the front of the sanctuary all the way out to the back of the church, through their narthex, down the steps, out the door, and out into the parking lot. People of all ages coming to pay their respects to his wife and his children and his grandchildren. A marriage that had always been somewhat difficult and rocky because there was much that needed to be forgiven, but still somehow survived. They came to pay their respects for the man who began to realize that there's only one voice to listen to that matters. See, this movie is not about making a bucket list. It's not about doing all of the crazy things that you want to do with your life. It's not about going to see the pyramids or jumping out of a plane to go skydiving. It's not about encountering it's not about encountering experiences that if you don't have them, you will be, quote, less than, unquote, when you die. No. This is a movie about the answer to the question, what is the meaning of my life? What is the meaning of your life? What will be written about in your obituary? What do you wake up thinking about, meditating upon, praying about? And what is it that at the end of the day you think about and pray about and meditate about, and as you think about it during the day, you seek to impart it upon your children so that one day they will wake up first thing in the morning thinking and praying and meditating about this and ending their day the same way? What is the meaning of your life?